are live. Welcome to episode 42 of To The Unknown Pod, a TGFB podcast. My name is Jordan Bush. I'm the executive director of TGFB Media, which exists to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. Today, I am joined by just one of the Island Boys, Ryan Finley. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Ryan Finley, entrepreneur, building projects, software projects with my boys, father of six. And yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Always glad to have you. This is our first episode in a while. We'll be getting back to some regularly scheduled recordings here. We've been having just a bunch of stuff going on, so we've had to take some time and not do that. And then this is our first episode since Ryan, since we kicked off another war in the Middle East. Just not fun. So again, this episode, we call it Bitcoin in a World at War. We want to kind of just start off by, just kind of talking, just reviewing. I mean, some of the stuff with this, just the war in Iran. I mean, Ryan, what are some of your first thoughts as you know, over the last few weeks? I know it's been, you know, you just expressed feeling like the mosquito in the nudist colony, where you're just like, where do you even start? There's so much stuff. There's so much disinformation, so much stuff that you don't know what to believe. There's incentives for, you know, parties on all sides of the war to make stuff up. And so this is our first, I mean, I guess you could say Ukraine is the first, you know, biggest intensity war in the time of social media and AI and disinformation, all that kind of stuff. But it's just been crazy to try to process, some of the stuff that's going on. So I'll let you kick things off first with your thoughts.
Yeah, it's a challenging environment for sure. I was telling the boys that finding the truth amidst a war in 2026 is like having a bunch of poop sandwiches thrown at you, and your job is to try to figure out how to find a little bit of nutrition somewhere. And it is. It is like a propaganda fire hose. So I think that would be one of the good things to talk about today. Would just be how to think about war. How to think about the history of the United States involvements in wars over the last 40 years. Try to think about it from a first principles perspective and a Christian perspective. And it's been really frustrating. Full disclosure, I was heavily influenced by Ron Paul back in the, 2006, 2007, in 2008, I was a delegate for him out in Hawaii. And I'd never, I grew up in public school, and I was, I had some times where my parents or grandparents would talk unfavorably about some of the wars that we had gotten involved in. And so I knew that they weren't always forthright and honest with the American people about why we were getting involved in wars. And I saw some frustration. I remember a couple times from my grandpa. Just not something you really are taught to really think critically about. And it wasn't until Ron Paul started speaking truth bombs back then that I really started having my views challenged. And I would just say it's kind of been a hobby of mine ever since, from then till now, just knowing that there's more to the story than is presented in, especially in the mainstream media and conservative circles and the Left Behind series. So,
I think that is, we're going to talk about Bitcoin a fair bit as it connects to this too, because again, this is part of the fascinating thing that we're going into right now is like, this is the first potentially start of what could turn into a world war, where Bitcoin is on the world stage. As we're sitting here, we can just start talking about this. I think obviously you have Iran controlling the Strait of Hormuz. You've got, stopping the flood of oil and a bunch of other commerce that goes on in that area. It's like 27% of world commerce goes through that area. And so just looking at, there's so many things we could talk about in terms of just the, seeming overconfidence of the United States to just kind of, we're just going to go in there and, you know, be able to end this quickly. And that's not how things are happening. Again, there's all kinds of questions about why we were there in the first place. There's, you know, Trump saying he got in because, you know, Israel, you know, was going to go in there first. And, yeah, just all of the stuff. I mean, just, I know there's tons of us who are sitting here and we're thinking about for the first time, or, you know, maybe not the very first time, but sitting here thinking about, like, how do you justify going to war? You know, thinking about things like just war theory, you know, and then just beyond, yeah, just a lot of these, there's so many questions, that people have. But I do think, you know, as we're looking at the, you know, just the difficulties of war and some of the things that can happen and how commerce and stuff can be interrupted. I mean, this, you almost couldn't make a better argument for Bitcoin. You know, like, you can shut down the Strait of Hormuz, but I guess theoretically you could shut down the internet, and there are places that, and there's actually been talk of that as well. But I mean, it's much more difficult and much more costly to cut yourself off from the internet, especially in a lot of these countries. And so I think it's something where I think the value proposition of Bitcoin is actually stronger than ever. And you kind of have seen that, Ryan, you mentioned, where's that one tweet you mentioned with the, about the relationship between gold and Bitcoin since the war kicked off. This is something where, again, obviously gold had its heyday. All of the gold bugs were dancing on the graves of the Bitcoiners. They were, and everyone else, they were, you know, rejoicing, saying, ha, we told you so, we told you so, we told you so. And again, good for them, still happy for the gold bugs. They are right. They do have, you know, principled groundings and historical groundings for what they're saying and you know, putting forth. And yet at the same time, Bitcoin, since things really kicked off, Bitcoin has been significantly more stable. It's actually been going up, whereas gold's kind of gone down a little bit. Here, let's share this.
That was the 15th, so it was 2 days ago, and we're up even more.
Yeah, so here we go. Bitcoin is up 4.2%. This is the other day. Bitcoin is up 4.2% despite you know, the strikes hitting Iran's main oil export terminal. Gold's flat, S&P is down, Asian equities are down, Korean stocks, everybody's down, Bitcoin's up. And again, this is part of the value proposition. This is not surprising to anyone who's been paying attention to Bitcoin for any length of time. Again, if you have something that, again, there's all kinds of people who talk about the tangibility of gold as a benefit. They're saying, well, you can hold it in your hands. You don't need to have some other, you know, thing like internet or whatever in order to hold on to it, to move it, whatever. And it says, and my response is always yes, but, right? That's a two-edged sword. And so, especially when you're trying to deal with this at a nation state level, you know, if you're trying to either ship more gold in, or, you know, move, you know, ship out large shipments of gold, if you're any of these Middle Eastern countries that are around that region, it is very difficult to move. I mean, what are you going to do? Move over land? You're going to, you know, go through the air where they're, you know, potentially shooting at you. I mean, it just becomes, and then overseas, now that the main trade route for them has been closed down. And so I think that, I mean, just due to all the things involved, it would not surprise me at all to see, you know, a lot of these nations in the Middle East that were already, some of them who have already adopted Bitcoin mining. You know, again, I just think, how long is it going to be, you know, before you see, if you can't sell your oil, right? If you can't transport it or whatever, you know, just starting to, you know, use some of that electricity in order to mine Bitcoin that you can do other things with. I mean, I think it wouldn't surprise me to see those kind of things. And then again, as these systems don't move quickly, right? And so as they get entrenched and as new realities start to set in, you know, these things aren't easily unentrenched. and so I think that, yeah, I think that from the Bitcoiner standpoint, again, obviously the overwhelming majority of Bitcoiners are more libertarian leaning, or more, even if they're not libertarian, they're just more critical of just the kind of big governments and the way that they're funded by fiat currencies, and so much of their wealth and their actions would not be possible in a world where they actually had to be fiscally responsible. And so when we see a war, you know, wars kicking off, we're not excited about that. It doesn't give us any, you know, great excitement to be right. But I just think there's a lot of people who are going to be waking up to the value proposition of Bitcoin, the various value propositions of Bitcoin as a result of wars like this. And so And we've talked about this verse before where Jesus says, those who are well have no need of a physician. Again, there's a lot of people in the world who, even those who aren't experiencing hyperinflation, the rest of them, they have a relatively comfortable life and they're in a relatively dependable, ability to access resources and all that kind of stuff. And in relatively stable currencies, even if they're not really. And so I think that something like this, a situation like this is a great advertisement for Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a very real possibility that there's, I mean, like you think about the United Arab Emirates, right? So they host an American base, and there's some people listening to this that haven't been getting an accurate picture of how the war has been going. The war hasn't been going well for the United States at all. All of our military bases in the Middle East have been like bombed like consistently almost every day since the beginning of this war. So we're like 17 days in, and including the United Arab Emirates, and to the point where we're putting soldiers up all over the place, just to get them out of harm's way. And so, I mean, there's been, drone attacks and missile attacks in, UAB, and you have, I think the last time I saw it, people are paying $350,000, $400,000 for a plane ticket out of Dubai just to get out.
Are you serious? Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it's, and again, and there's just so few flights. Anyways, but you have Pakistan at war with Afghanistan. You've got the Ukraine war with Russia.
You've got Lebanon. Actually, I've got let me find that. Yeah, here. Here you go. I'll find this. I pulled this up. Courtesy of our friends over at the Council of Foreign Relations. They have this awesome website showing all the conflicts. So you have things that are most germane to the United States. You've got conflict in Syria. So again, they have like, you can go on there if you tap on one of these things or just hold your mouse over it. It gives you the impact on the US and then the conflict status. You've got Gaza, Palestine. I mean, Israeli, Palestine. And then you've got conflict with Hezbollah in Lebanon. So that's getting worse. Yeah. You have obviously instability in Iraq.
A lot worse. Israel's going to, it looks like they're going to try to take out the whole section of southern Lebanon.
Yep. There was rumors of a U.S. plane being shot down, I think, in Iraq. And then obviously you've got, you mentioned Pakistan bombing Afghanistan. I mean, just bonkers stuff. And then, I mean, we
China,
didn't even mention Iran.
Taiwan.
Yeah, that's exactly. I was just going to go, you got China. Let's see.
I think the latest on that China. One is they're expected to, like, it could be even by July. I think they're waiting for us to get entangled even more with this Iran war. And if that happens, there's Taiwan is toast.
Yeah. And this is where, I mean, there's all kinds of rumors.
One thing that people should consider is, when you have, like, if this is headed towards a world war, and that's not just fear mongering. I mean, that's like, we're in this escalation spiral, as Robert Pepe likes to describe it. This easily becomes a world war. And when that happens, like, you're looking at like millions of people that are going to be displaced. Like, what do those people do with their wealth, like their life's wealth?
Yeah.
That's what I think we probably could be. And as, it's actually going to be really sad. I actually expect Bitcoin to just, as things get worse, I expect Bitcoin to just keep going up, because there's going to be people that are going to have to sell everything they have and leave and take it with them.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about just some of the, again, we're not like foreign policy experts here, so we're not trying to do that. All right. We're not trying to pretend to be that, but just some of the, I mean, just some of the threats. Ryan, talk about some of the desalination plants, like talk about some of the, you know, questions around that and the potential threats around those.
Yeah. So, I mean, to go back to the beginning of the Iran war, we were in negotiations with Iran's leadership. I don't even think, what was it? I don't even think we briefed a majority of our own politicians, because we assassinated their supreme leader, or whatever his name is, Khamenei. While the negotiations were still going on. So, and then, that marked the beginning of the war. And then Israel and the United States started bombing Iran. From the very get-go, we just assumed that we would just bomb the stink out of them for a couple of days, 2 or 3 days, and it would usher in a regime change. And it was like the underestimation of the century. They've been waiting for this and preparing for it for like 30 years. And it was just next in line, took over. It's like their whole command structure is decentralized, and they just went to work, just methodically executing their plan as they basically took out a majority of our radars all over the Middle East, bombed all of our military bases in the Middle East. We hadn't, like, and we don't even know the extent of it, honestly. We're completely, I feel like Americans are in the dark as far as how extensive. There's certain things they can't hide, like, you know, planes that have been downed.
Yeah, there's things like that. But then there's, I mean, again, I will say, it's so hard to know anything right now because, again, you have incentives. There's always been like fog of war. There's always been incentives during wars for both sides to lie about, stretch the truth, exaggerate things that are against them or for them or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have AI and you have all kinds of stuff. And then you have like bot armies on Twitter and you have all, I mean, just it's incredibly, incredibly difficult. With that said, like there are limits to what you can, I mean, you could hide things algorithmically too. That's another thing that I mean, yeah, we could talk about that. There are, especially on, you know, centralized platforms, making a case for something like Nostr, you know, to grow in prominence. You know, where you do have these algorithms, you can hide certain stories, you can, or make it more difficult for them to come out. But you know, we were mentioning
the desalinization.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll just cut to that. So the United States has initiated the war, and we've been the one that's escalated. So, and some of it I think is literally just to test how Iran is going to respond. So, and what they've done is they've been very disciplined in how they've responded. So we bombed a desalinization plant, and they immediately responded. I want to say it was like within an hour, they bombed another one. And there's things like that where...
So, you're saying we bombed one of their desalination plants. So let's just back up a little bit. So part of one of the big problems, obviously, in the Middle East was water, right? Is access to potable water. So water you can drink. And part of the issue is, you know, one of the ways that they get around these countries get around being in deserts, is that they have these plants where they turn salt water into fresh water. And these are obviously, because of how critical they are, I mean, there's places where I was reading or I was listening to a video about this where there's something along the lines of, there's some of these places where the total water that they need, they only get anywhere from like, it was like 5 to 40% from actual local sources. And so basically, if they didn't have desalinization plants, they'd be totally hosed. Like they'd be in a bad situation. And so, you know, these things become targets in the middle of the war. And so in the United States, you know, strategic targets, they go after, you know, Iran's desalination plants. You have these other, you know, have Iran doing the same thing effectively is what you're saying. Iran turned around and bombed. And, you know, one of the ones that it was UAE or where was it?
Yeah. I think it was one of the UAE's ones. Iran only gets 2% of their water from desalinization plants. The UAE, it's like, they get the majority of their water from these desalinization plants.
Yeah.
And what the reason Iran is like, some of these bombings are like, they were using these other, they were using these countries as, I mean, obviously they have US military bases on them. So it's like Iran in a sense is holding those countries accountable for, things like that. So anyways, they basically sent a message, you keep doing this, we're like, it's a tit for a tat. Like you bomb one, we're going to bomb one. And then we'll see who cries uncle first. Cause like,
yes, because you're talking about millions of people. I mean, like there's, I think it was, it's millions of people who, if you blow up one of these, a couple of these plants in the UAE, you're talking millions of people dead.
Yeah. And it's already like arguably war crimes. Like it's just one of those things. And then we blew up. This was a horrific one. We blew up like a huge oil depot in Iran, and it was like end of the world, sky filled with oil. Like it was insane. Like I've never seen anything like it. And then they responded by bombing some of the Saudis' oil storage tanks. And so the whole thing is, again, and that was a tit for the tat thing. They're going to continue to do it, and they've already said it. And so what happens is, we went into this war just thinking that we would cause an immense amount of pain and there would be a regime change. What we underestimated them is they have more leverage for, like, they can cause more pain on the United States and Western countries than we can cause on them. And what they've done is they've shown that in the Strait. They control the Strait right now. It doesn't matter what U.S. politicians say. They control the state. They're effectively, and I think Trump's come out and he's like, we control the Strait. 1 hour later, the Iran immediately is like, okay, boom. And they just, I think they've blown up, I don't know how many tankers, like 10 oil tankers, just 16 or 20 ships in total. But like, and they just kept doing it. And at the end of the day, so now I think the Middle East is down 9 million, it's like 9 million barrels per day. It represents, again, I'm just throwing some numbers out. I want to say it's like 35 to 40% of the oil that was coming out of the ground has been like capped off.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, and that it can only get worse from here, basically. If we try to take over the Strait of Hormuz, it's going to be a massive ground war with them. And again, anything that we do to escalate, they'll respond in kind. And so you're basically talking about, you could have enormous amounts of the Middle Eastern oil supply taken offline, which people don't understand. We were talking about it before the show. Our country can't handle it. Like, we can't handle $150, $200 oil. Our financial system will blow up. And that's like the least of it. Like, we're the wealthy country. I mean, again, you can spend days talking about the second and the third order effects when you have the wealthiest country in the world. Like, we'll collapse into at least a recession or worse, probably worse. You have other countries around the world, like, they won't even be able to have electricity. Like, they won't be able to afford oil. Like,
yeah, this you've got, I was reading, this was one example. I think they were saying that the cost of insuring an oil tanker was like $40,000 or something like that. It used to be $40,000, normally is $40,000. And like right now, because of everything, it's $1 million just to insure it. So whatever, you know, whatever you're talking 25 times, 250 times, and, you know, whatever it is, just bonkers. The other thing, I mean, just the other thing that has made all of this more difficult. Again, it does seem like the United States is, I mean, just due to the one of the things they've talked about, and I'm sure everyone's heard about this, but just like the incongruity between the cost of the Iranian missiles and the stuff that they've, shot so far versus the United States. Like, we're having to spend way more money to take down these little drone swarms. It's like they're much cheaper. Even like the things, one of the reasons why they control the Strait of Hormuz is because they've got these little tiny ones that they can just put in the water. They can go around and actually inflict meaningful damage that are still relatively, you know, very, very cheap, especially relative to the response, measures that the United States is giving. It is like a twisted version of David versus Goliath. Not saying anything about the legitimacy of either of the sides here.
Yeah, no, and that's a perfect analogy. I mean, you like this was known before this war. Like it's just math. Like, when you have a $30,000 drone that you have to spend $2 million to shoot out of the air, like, I mean, and then they can just, like, the amount of those drones that they can make is just like insane. And it might even be cheaper than that. I saw another number where it was like more like 9,000. Warfare has changed. Like, we're still we absolutely dominate them as far as our power. But it that doesn't matter. Like, you, at the end of the day, it's like, how much pain can you inflict on the other side before they implode? And this was a war I don't think we should have gotten involved with. But now we're in a situation where we're about to find out. We're like, and I don't like saying that because it really, really frustrates me because we're in an escalation loop, and it doesn't matter what we say, Iran controls the strait right now. And the only way that changes is an extraordinarily Vietnam level, painful, like ground operation that will, like, in my opinion, from everything that I've read, it's going to be like throwing troops into a meat grinder. And it's just, it's super disturbing because I'm still back at the very beginning. Like, I don't understand why we're there. I don't think we should be there. I think like we didn't want to be there. The president was elected. Like, we literally elected him not to get involved in another war like this.
I would love to see the figures. I would love to see the figures on the popularity or like the support at the beginning of a war. Right. Like, I mean, obviously, I don't know enough about Vietnam. I feel like World War II, I'm sure there were people who were against it, but it seems like it was just due to the nature of Pearl Harbor. It does seem like there's some sort of precipitating, you know, event required in order to convince, you know, you to get involved. Obviously, Vietnam was not popular. Obviously, Iraq and some of these things weren't as popular. 9/11, obviously, that that wasn't a catalyzing event to get people behind at least going into Afghanistan, trying to, you know, do some of this stuff. And so again, without getting full conspiracy theorist, like it is one of these things where you're just like, oh man, like, cause there's people are so against the war. It seems like the popular sentiment, there's talk about a draft and people are losing their minds. Like, I just think, I mean, you think about all these, I just don't see any public support for the conflict, whether left, right, or whatever. And so it just seems like Trump is literally setting on fire any support or like a lot of the support and goodwill that he had. And so you're just kind of at the point where you're like, all right, this is either going to end quickly, or it's going to escalate, you know, either because we feel like we have to, or for some reason, or just because there's something else, some other precipitating event, which I really hope doesn't happen.
Dude, the setup for this whole thing was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Again, Trump was elected to prosecute the criminals involved in the Epstein situation. It was getting national attention. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of heat on it. It looked like there was at least some progress being made. And then out of nowhere, he just flips and he says that it was all made up. It was a big sham. And you're like, what in the world is going on? And then all of a sudden, boom, we're at war. Right in the middle of it. And it just like, it was just like, everyone's a squirrel and now we have to deal with this other horrible situation. And the whole Epstein thing is completely buried. No one's held accountable at all. And, it is concerning. Like, what in the world has happened? Why would you burn down your base? It's going to go down as one of the most unpopular wars ever.
Obviously, I'm sure, like in your case, like, I mean, you've got, you know, late teen, early 20s kids. And so like the threat of a draft is, you know, more real than, you know, like on the table for you than, and I'm sure some of our listeners as well. I mean, it's just horrifying to think about. I mean,
100%. Yeah. And again, you have to think in first principle, to zoom out. What are we doing? Like, is this literally what, is this our country's problem right now? Like, I would say we have 100 problems and Iran wasn't one of them. You know, we've been around, I remember weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It was all lies. Mm-hmm. It was all lies. It was just, Iraq was getting around the petrodollar system. They wanted, again, we didn't want that. And Israel didn't want that. And so next thing you know,
you need even more petty reasons than that too. You can get into, like, if you haven't looked into, obviously Saddam tried to kill George Bush Sr. and like some of that stuff. It's like Iraq had nothing to do whatsoever with 9/11. Like it made no sense. And yet we did it anyhow. It is just one of these things where you just think about the thing that I would like to kind of come back to. I mean, we've been going for 30 minutes. I feel like one of the things to come back to is just to think about, I mean, all warfare is economic. Right. At the end of the day, there's people doing calculations on whether or not it's worth it to do a certain action. And so in many cases, wars are the calculus is done with, you know, dollar terms or the currency terms, you know, whatever the currency is. Oh, we think we can make more money. That's a reason why people go to war. We think that, you know, this will be good for us. If we win, we'll get this. And so it's worth the risk. There's other ones where it's existential. You know, like if we don't do this, they're going to kill us. I don't see anybody arguing in any, any possible, universe where it's being argued that Iran is going to, you know, destroy us. We're not going to be able to exist. There's all kinds of ridiculous things where they're like, oh, they're off the coast of California and they're going to shoot these things. Just like, yeah.
Hey, okay. So I mean, some of my biggest critics, because I've been posting about this nonstop for the last 17 days, like basically all March. My biggest critics, the ones that actually jump in the comment section, they're like, I'm doing this because I love my grandkids. I don't want them to be bombed with a nuclear bomb from Iran, or, you know, and so there's a level of like, there's the rank and file, there's a certain demographic of Republican that just swallows whatever is given to them and said, we have got to, like, it's the weapons of mass destruction. It's just fear. It's emotionalism. And it's a very powerful emotion. And we are a very emotional people, and too emotional. Like, we don't think rationally enough. We need to calm down. Netanyahu has been trying to get the United States to do this for 40 years. Look it up. There's like videos of him giving speeches to American politicians, like back in the 80s, the 90s. And he's like, 2 weeks to the bomb. He's holding up a chart of a bomb. We're in 2026. And he finally yeah. somehow Again, got our US president to do it. And you're just like,
you can forgive, right? Like you can, again, it is naive, I think, at this point, but like you can, honestly, if there's people who are thinking, oh, they're so close, if they're thinking about their grandkids, great. Like that's a good step, right? Like that's kind of where I was getting at, is like thinking about this long-term, you know, like what is this doing long-term for your kids, your grandkids? I mean, there's 100 problems here at home that, I mean, are just ginormous problems. I mean, like a lot, we mentioned, I mean, there's like an affordability crisis for housing. You got illegal immigration. You got legal immigration.
Yeah. Dude, let's just talk about this for a second. Yeah. What's it going to do to the birth rates? They're at 1.6. Yeah. Down they go. What's it going to do to the inflation? It's going to crush the low income and middle class of the United States. Absolutely going to crush them. What's it going to do to jobs? It's going to, like, it'll probably, actually, if ground troops go into Iran, full-blown recession, and it's going to be like, I'll say, well, like 2008.
And you think about, and this is where, again, this is where, like, if somebody is saying that, if somebody is a boomer who's getting ready to retire, who's saying, I care about my grandkids, it's like, okay, great. I think you're super naive. I don't think that's actually going to help. I think it's actually, you're being, you know, pawn, and you're going to feel, you know, the effects of that, including the effect to, again, if your ability to retire is it all tied up in the stock market, and we go into global war? Like, goodness gracious! Like, what are we talking about here?
Ugh. Yeah, it, like, dude, and this isn't even the. I literally, there's that one meme where the guy's standing by himself, staring off into the abyss. I forgot what I don't even know what the name of the meme is, but I literally feel like that
just,
sometimes.
Just a picture of you.
Dude, at the same time that we're literally on the cusp of just burning everything down, the AI like revolution that's about to hit our culture is like incomprehensible. And like, we don't know the effects of it. Like how many, I mean, 10, 50,
yeah, you have
10,
Facebook
20,
just
30,
laid off.
10, 20, 30% of workers are going to get laid off in the next handful of years. Like, it's just a matter of like, wait till these, well, first of all, if there's a necessity, what happens when we go into a recession and these businesses need to save a whole bunch of money? They will like replace workers. Like the AI, the models are already capable of replacing an enormous percentage of workers in the United States. And people have no idea. The majority of people have no idea.
And again, the thing I do think is interesting is like, obviously in the immediate sense, that makes sense, right? But then what happens to your economy and to all these companies when they lay off 30% or 20% of their workers? And then these workers are out there scrambling to try to find new jobs that may or may not exist. And it's like, again, it's like, it makes sense in the immediate term. But the thing that, like, this is what it is to be human, is you have to factor what makes sense in the immediate term with what makes sense in the longer term. And it's this time preference, right? This is what we talk about in Bitcoin all the time. And so, like, it's not at all clear to me that the thing that makes sense to do in the immediate term is actually in the long-term interest. And so, yeah, I just think, as it relates to AI and a whole host of other things, like, this is, I mean, there's so much of this that is unknown, that it makes, I mean, in light of that, it makes even less sense to go over there and get involved in the middle of something that we don't understand. Now, at the same time, there are people who are saying, no, this isn't about Iran. This is about China. And so the goal to disrupt Iran, you know, even if there were other nations or another nation that is the precipitating, you know, reason why we're in there, it can serve the secondary effect of helping make things harder on somebody like China or Russia, who are dependent on Iran. There's all kinds of things you can find about. There's this whole, by virtue of the fact that there are no, there's not Western capital controls on Iran, that it is kind of like a, not so much black market, but there is a whole humongous part of the global economy that's going through Iran, if that were to, so yeah, like there's just all kinds of things going on that aren't immediately apparent. So I'm not, what I want to point out is, like, it's not like there could be nothing quote unquote good or nothing in the United States interest that could come out of this. Like, I think that, you know, again, all of these things, everybody, you know, even if in this particular thing, the United States is not in a great position relative to the war with Iran, every country is not in a good place. Like, China's got crazy amounts of debt. Russia's sitting here looking at this, looking at this conflict and potential. There's rumors about the potential, you know, of going to war with the United States. They're sitting here weighing this after they've been at war with Ukraine, which hasn't been going as well as they expected it to go, due probably in part to NATO backing of Ukraine, all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, they're weaker than they would like to be. And then you've got all these other, you know, you have currencies hyperinflating. You've got, again, all these other regional conflicts that are happening. I mean, nobody's in a great spot right now. And I mean, so much of this, I mean, you could look at how much of this warfare is possible. Again, to go back to the Bitcoin side of things, so much of this warfare is not possible if you have actual scarce money that doesn't allow governments to deficit spend and doesn't allow governments to, you know, fight wars that their grandkids and great grandkids will pay for. And so, again, as we're discussing all this, and, you know, some of you are like, this is a Bitcoin podcast. It's like, yeah, this is a Bitcoin podcast. Like, Bitcoin is political. Like, money is by definition a political thing, a political tool that has tremendous downstream effects all over the world, because of how it changes. Again, we talk about the love of money being the root of all kinds of evil. The scriptures, you know, talk about this. And so things that you do, things that affect the money are going to have all kinds of downstream effects that aren't obvious at any given time.
Yeah, I think so. I'll just make the statement and then I'll make my case for it. I think this is the end of the petrodollar system. I think a lot of people understand what that is, but essentially we've required, like, these Middle Eastern oil countries to transact, like, especially like Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. We made security agreements with them to protect them in order for them, and they would use US dollars to transact their oil in. And I honestly think that's over, because we just found out that there is a single point of failure in the Strait of Hormuz. And we're about to find out that that's not easy to get back. And it's going to be too costly for us, in my opinion. And anyways, you have Iran, China, Russia, Brazil, maybe India, who else? And BRICS. This is actually very public. Like, they have, like, these countries have record, like, they've seen the United States abuse our privilege of printing endless amounts of money and sending those dollars all over the world and then debasing them. And so effectively, when you got trillions of dollars going around the world, and then we print mountains of, like, we print 8% more dollars each year, we're effectively stealing from everyone who's holding US dollars all over the world. I think we might be on the verge of that being gone, like our that ability. And if the petrodollar is done, then all money printing in the United States gets dumped on basically us, and we can't handle that. So that's when the pitchforks comes out and we have to start living within our means. So
To further elaborate on that, it's like, okay, so right for the, since World War II, the primary product output of the United States, you know, the thing that we export is dollars. We export dollars, and that was prefaced upon in post-World War II world, people wanted dollars because we had the lion's share of the world's gold. You know, people, there was not much gold left in Europe. And so they were kind of forced to rely on the United States, and we had deserved, in many cases, in a real way, we'd won the world's trust by virtue of, you know, the way that things had ended, and by virtue of the fact that we had had the discipline to have a good currency, all this kind of stuff. And so over the course of, you know, since that ended, we've done nothing but squander little by little that trust. And abused the trust that we had with the petrodollar system, that where we had, you know, an artificial peg between dollars and gold and all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, you're really starting to see, this is something Pastor Chris Wiley talked about at our conference when he came and spoke a few years ago. I think it was 2023. Like trust is the real currency at the end of the day. And so, I mean, when you have a system, I mean, you can control people with fear, like for a certain period of time. You know, you can, but people have to be able to trust you. And when you as a nation are doing things where people can't trust you, which, whether it's something like, the war in Ukraine, where in the UK and in the United States, Russian bank accounts were seized, you know, and wait a second. Now you guys can't be trusted anymore. Okay. We're not going to forget that. We're going to pull out and disconnect ourselves. And there's a humongous cost to doing that. And so again, Russia and all these other BRICS countries started, not completely, but started accepting other currencies, whether it's gold, whether it's a basket of currencies from the national currencies from other countries rather than dollars. And so some of this can be self-inflicted. They can choose to disconnect from something like the SWIFT system, this monetary network that governs the world, or they can be forced off of it. The United States has kicked countries like Russia off of the SWIFT system. And so that is a double-edged sword, right? It's like, this is a double-edged thing that affects you as much as it affects this other country, whatever country you do this to, because this, you know, these monetary networks are monetary lifeblood systems, or monetary circular systems that, you know, enable the world to get access to what for the United States is their largest export, dollars. And so if you are choosing to cut people off from dollars, there will reach a tipping point where there's not as much demand for your greatest export, and then you put yourself in big trouble. And so again, you're in a situation where Iran has cut themselves off. They're cut off the Strait of Hormuz. You've got all these countries that are in that area where Iran is now saying, unless you accept, I mean, they're threatening to only take payment in Chinese yuan, and basically anybody can get their stuff through there except for the United States and Israel. There's all kinds of stuff going on. And so, if this keeps going on for any length of time, you know, these new realities, as reality changes, you know, there's been one reality since World War II. Now there's, you know, it seems like there's a new reality coming. And again, one of the, just to bring this back to Bitcoin, I mean, literally in the white paper, it talks about one of the problems with the existing monetary system is all the trust that's required to make it work. And so in a world, in an atmosphere, an environment where it's a low trust environment, something like Bitcoin makes all the sense in the world. And it's something that, you know, this isn't, again, these Bitcoin guys are not all just pie in the sky. You know, we created a problem in search of a solution, you know, like, you know, a solution in search of a problem. Like, this actually does solve a very real problem that was underappreciated because people underestimated the risk of the existing system crumbling, in spite of all the evidence to the contrary, that's exactly what was happening.
Because at the end of the day, we could sit here and we could talk for hours about how you can't trust you can't trust the U.S. dollar, and to talk about the debasement and show it on paper. And then at the end of the day, before Bitcoin existed, the answer was, so what are you going to do about it? And there was nothing you could do about it. And that's what Satoshi recognized. That was the genius of the invention of Bitcoin. There literally was nothing there was no exit. And as you're seeing, like, gold, obviously it's having an incredible, like, the world's also waking up to gold. I just shared a tweet that you want to show that real quick. This is a really interesting development. China has cornered the market on rare earths, which is required for a lot of, like, defense technology and chip manufacturing and some other stuff. Anyways, super important area. I think they control like 92 or 96% of it. Really interesting. Third month out of the last four that the U.S. biggest export has been gold. Only time that's happened in at least 20 years and probably ever. U.S. is a de facto net settling a portion of its trade deficit in gold. And again, you're just like, so weird. And this is all coming after the fact that, like, there isn't a world war going on right now, but I would say it's, in a sense, it's kind of a soft world war, because we are the existing hegemon with the world reserve currency, and we don't want to give that up. You have these other world powers, Russia, China, you know, Iran, and they're not happy about it. And they've been working for the last several decades to put a stop to it. And they've been very public about it. And so, for example, when China has control of the rare earth market, they literally can say, if you want this, you will pay in physical gold. And just a side note, you just said, I just shared it with you before the show, but Iran basically just said that they're setting up the Strait of Hormuz. They're gonna run all the ships through a little narrow lane, and it's basically gonna be a toll booth, and they're gonna make $75 billion a year charging ships to go through. And it's like, at the end of the day, whoever controls the strait can do whatever they want. And a world like, and again, we're about to find out the hard way, unfortunately.
It is. So a lot of these, all war is economic war, and economics is war. Like, this is, it seems boring. There's lots of people who, you know, again, we've been able to kind of avoid thinking about these things, or at least we think we have, in, you know, the United States and the Western world. We just take it for granted. The fact that the US dollar is, the fact that this system is, it'll always be this way. It makes me think of the verse in, I think it's 2 Peter, where, you know, basically there's people who say, oh, the world has always been going on like this. And it says, and Peter talks about, they deliberately overlooked the fact that the world was flooded. Like, the flood happened. Like, God doesn't just, the world just doesn't, hasn't always been this, you know, unaffected by, like, the world, actions have consequences. And there are, this is just a reality. And I think, I know that there's a lot of people, including people in the United States, especially people in the United States, who have been so untouched by the reality of war. So, I mean, the possibility of living like the rest of the world is so far removed from their experience and so far removed from what they think is possible, that, yeah, it's going to be, I mean, the fact that somebody could, you know, it could, even without there being like a hot war, the fact that people could lose trust and start looking for, you know, just choose to go elsewhere, choose to transact in another type of money rather than US dollars. You know, it's like, it's, I mean, again, like that's part of, I mean, that's big, a big part of this thing is just like you choose. And one of the things that, apart from, I always mention this, is like with Nayib Bukele, before he did what he did in El Salvador and made Bitcoin legal tender, every single Bitcoin transaction that have ever happened has been voluntary. You could also probably throw in some of the people who had like ransomware in the computer. But like for people who are actually adopting it, they're choosing. They're saying, hey, I want Bitcoin. And so I'm exchanging dollars for Bitcoin. And you know, in the case of gold, when you exchange dollars for it, you actually want the gold more. There's something that you actually want more than you want this other thing. And so you're willing to give it in exchange for this other thing. And so for like that, that thing has happened, that transaction and logic of transactions happened all through human history. And now it's starting to happen with the dollar. People are starting to wake up to the fact that I don't want this anymore. Like the cost of this is too high to my national, you know, my national security or whatever it is. So you mean this awakening is going to happen on multiple levels. It'll happen on a national level that will obviously be incredibly influential. But then even before that, it's already happening on individual levels, whether, you know, it's individuals accumulating gold, silver, individuals accumulating Bitcoin, because there's a lack of trust. There's a lack of trust in the system.
Yeah. This was an unforced error. Like we didn't, there's a book called Bitcoin Money. It's a little kid's book. And it's so good because it talked about the temptation, whoever is in charge of the money, it's always been a temptation to abuse it. And that's what we did. We're not an exception. And again, who is we? I mean, it's politicians, it's the people. Very bluntly, we've spent more than we've produced. And we financialized the world and we declared ourselves to be the center of finance. So the United States, instead of like, again, we have unlimited resources in the United States. We should be like the powerhouse of the world. But we're like, we just want to print money. We want our main export to be money. And so we outsourced all the manufacturing. And so we had China become the manufacturer of the world. So that they're the factory, right? And then and Russia is the food and oil producer, like they're the biggest. Anyways, that's going to have consequences. Like, again, it's the laws of nature. That system, like you said beforehand, is like this Formula One car that just runs. It's like an insane machine until something, a part blows up, and then all of a sudden it's completely kaput. I think that's where we're at. And we're starting, you could see it. We're starting to reshore. I mean, you got TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor. Like, we're recognizing that we need to be producing way more computer chips in the United States, and they're building factories, chip factories as fast as they can. But it's like, also, you know, Taiwan could be gone here in 6 months. And
well, you've got, yeah, medical production. Like, after COVID, people are realizing, like, we're relying on other countries like China and India to get the vast majority of our medication. Now, again, we can argue about it. We can argue about do we actually need those medic?
like
the vast majority of them just putting money in the pockets.
That's all another episode. Yeah. Things like our transformers for our electrical grid. And it's just like, people have, if we started today to reindustrialize, it would take 20 plus years of like extremely high inflation, like just building out factories to produce the goods that we need and consume in the United States. And that's becoming a self-sufficient country. If we go to war, because China's like, we're like, the world's done with you guys exporting your trash. We're printing garbage pieces of paper and expecting the world to just eat it. And the world is saying, you are thieving, you guys are thieves. And that's the truth. Like, because we need to be humble as Americans. The system is corrupt. It's stealing from us and stealing from anyone who holds a dollar anywhere in the world. That's corrupt, and it should never have been done, and it shouldn't have been allowed. And here we are in 2026 at the end of the system, because we're so out over the cliff. Iran knows that all they have to do is control the strait and our system goes boom.
It's one thing to say, it's one thing to steal from people, right? Because, like, again, you can have people live in a totalitarian dictatorship, right? Where they're being stolen from. You can do that for a period of time. But, like, when then you're also then bombing, like, some of these countries, and you're like, wait a second, you're gonna steal from me and bomb me? Like, or you're gonna steal from me and tell me like it? It's just like, no, I'm not going to do that, you know? And so, and there comes a limit to the hegemon, whatever it is, the United States, the vaunted military. Like, there's a limit to how much the United States can afford to enforce at a global level when there's not actually active desire from the people and from the nations around the world to be involved with you, to be doing business with you. And so again, we just have taken that for granted to a staggering degree. And again, but this is always going to happen. This was always going to happen. Like, and from this was certain from the day that, you know, the United States effectively declared bankruptcy in 1971. This was going to happen. This is just what was going to happen. There's no way around it.
You cannot defy nature without like facing the consequences. Here's a rabbit hole for people. Go back and look at how Persia or Iran was taken advantage of for their oil by the British. And you're just like, just go back and look at the history. And you're just like, oh my goodness. We've been assassinating their leaders to take control of their oil for like 75 years. And you're just like, oh, that is so, it's just so on brand. Like, and it wasn't us to begin with. Like, it was the British. And then we're like, we're just like the bald eagle. Like, we swept in and we wanted to steal the goods from them. And
you have like the propaganda too. One of the things, like Trump, when he came out, he was talking about trying to defend going in there in the first place. And he's like, oh, since 1974 or something, the Shah of Iran has been, you know, a brutal dictator or something like that. And again, you have to think, like, all these things are carefully worded. So like, yes, 1974, they have like I think it was 74. There's like Iranian Revolution. Great. It happens. Okay. But what happened in like, I think it was like 1954 was like a US-led coup. Like, the US is behind a coup of the Iranian leadership that had been elected by the people and whatever. And so it's like, oh, we conveniently neglect to mention that this also happened. And this was a precipitating event for a lot of the distrust of the United States and a lot of these other things that happened. And so again, like, it's just, you know, but when you don't love the truth, when you don't have a commitment, go ahead.
This is important because everyone's about to hear this a lot on the news. We're about to hear, never again are these people going to say death to America. Here's the thing. America said death to all your leaders and death to anyone who stands in our way of getting your oil and basically skimming off of your power. That's just the truth. Go back and look at the history of the situation. We're like, we paint ourselves like we're this morally righteous country, but like I don't want to throw everyone under the bus, but at least our leadership and our elites have been deeply wicked in the way they've dealt with the world for a long time. Like this, like the three letter agencies assassinating leaders, like, that's what we've done forever. Like, we've done it all through the Middle East. There's anybody that stands up to us and our thieving.
You can't sit here. And again, because I'm just hearing people in my head. There's going to be people, not real voices. I'm not like schizophrenic. But I'm saying, like, and hear people are saying, oh, well, you know.
You can hear the protests.
Yeah. The United States, oh, like, we have a right to defend ourselves. It's like, okay, is there any limit in your mind to, like, what is defending ourselves? Like, again, if it's a third order effect removed, like if we let this happen, then this would happen, then this would happen, then this would happen, then this would happen. And then five steps removed, we could be weakened or we could have our trade threatened or whatever. It's like, okay, this is a way to be able to justify any evil thing that you could possibly think of. Like, you can always justify something if that's your standard. Right. If your standard is, well, anything that weakens us in any way or potentially makes us more vulnerable or, you know, whatever, or makes us less rich. And it's like, obviously there is a sense in which, you know, vulnerability is real. But like, you can't sit here and justify anything in the name of you being as big as you could possibly be or, you know, whatever. Like, this is just, it's just lunacy.
And I would say this is the classic example of why we need more financial education. People need to understand that what we're actually fighting for when we're fighting to hold on to the power of the world reserve currency, it's we're fighting for the ability to steal from other countries around the world. And if we're saying, oh, no, we don't. Okay, then stop printing money. Let's start living within our means. The whole system implodes immediately. like instantly.
Yep.
We need to be able to steal from anyone who holds dollars all over the world. And so then when you, all of a sudden, when you reframe it like that, this isn't righteously motivated. Sure, they'll put them all, oh, Iran has murdered 40,000 people over the last 5 years. And it's just like, it's system. It's a moral, or it's a, I don't even know what to call it.
Quagmire. Yeah. Quagmire. And then it also destroys you as a nation. Like it's like the, honestly, like the reserve currency is like this. It's like the ring. It's like the one ring where it's like, everybody wants it. It's so alluring. You get to be the one who, you get to have the currency that everybody else wants. And yet it destroys anybody. It ultimately destroys everyone who's ever held it and ever will hold it. And so it's like this paradoxical thing where, you know, in the short term, yes, having the reserve currency makes sense. It's, you do get to reap a lot of benefits of it by virtue of theft. You have to recognize that.
Yep.
But then it ends up always crushing you because you fall into this temptation that then yields to more temptation, that yields to more temptation and yields to, you know, what's the thing, like lesser returns, diminishing returns. And then it ends up crushing you where you're incentivized to farm out your manufacturing base to other countries.
Farm out your manufacturing base. You're incentivized to destroy the home so you can have more workers.
Well, hey, exactly. Hey, so your GDP can be higher.
Let's get all the women out of the homes and we'll double the amount of workers and then we can double the amount of wages and we can, and next thing you know, you're just like.
To farm out all of your medicines are made by your enemies, literally like the people who have the most to gain from you losing. I mean, like, there's like tons of evidence of like the fentanyl crisis being fed in part by, you know, China and some of these other things. Like it's just, when you look at the incentives involved, if you're thinking at a, you know, low enough time preference, you start to, I mean, again, the desire to maintain this short-term benefit of having the reserve currency, like in the power, the short-term power that it gives you, it makes you stupid. Because you lose sight of the bigger picture and what's happening to you at a larger scale.
And you sacrifice future generations. You literally destroy them. Like, it's never been, I mean, we've said it a million times, it's never been more difficult for a young person to buy a house. Like, everything's unaffordable. Like, all the metrics, all the metrics of what we would, especially as Christians, what we would say would be a flourishing society, they're in decline. And
except for Bible reading, congrats to the Gen Z people. The Gen Z, there's an article that talked about like Gen Z are like leading the country in terms of the percentage of them who are reading the scriptures. I was like, way to go, Gen Z.
It is. Yeah. It's very impressive. 54%. Read the, hold on. Yeah. Just a second. I just want to say this. Young Gen Z males, 54% are reading their Bible weekly. Baby boomer males, 28%. And that's, and then Gen Z females, 46% reading their Bible weekly, and baby boomer female, 33%.
These are shocking numbers. I mean, like, for all the talk about how bad this is,
that completely blew me away.
Incredible. So with that being said, we'll leave it there for today. I do want to mention where are we at here? It is coming up. We won't even give the date. We're like middle of March. This should be coming out. I'm going to have them. We've got a few episodes in the can that are supposed to be coming out. Well, I'll just have them mass dump them all. But this is going to be coming out within the next week or so. We are going to be doing another TGFB event, TGFB 26. It's going to be a smaller event than we've done in the past, but it's going to be the day before BitBlock Boom in Fort Worth, Texas, at the same venue where Fort Worth BitBlock Boom is going on. You can find more information. Let's see here. I'll share this. TGFB.com, right on the front page. We've got it's the first thing you see when you go to the website, TGFB 26 conference in Fort Worth, Texas. You can register today. This is going to be a different type of event than we've done in the past. We've done in the past, just, you know, your traditional, you have speakers who are on stage. We have an audience, they're listening. This is going to be much more interactive, much more, decentralized, if you will, in terms of how we do things. So I'm really looking forward to this. We have, again, it's going to be a smaller event, much more intimate. We're going to have speakers who you know and love. Jimmy Song is going to be there. There's going to be a number of other people. We're still confirming people who are going to be in town for the regular, for the BitBlock Boom event. We're going to be getting some of the speakers from there. who are going to be coming as well. So we want you there. In addition to those, even beyond like the big shiny names, there's going to be a ton of awesome Christian Bitcoiners and awesome Bitcoiners, period, who are going to be there, who are going to have more experience and more, more experience and more, just tons of levels of interest in Bitcoin that maybe you've never even thought of before. And just applying Bitcoin to various different aspects of life and work. We're going to be talking about, there's going to be conversation about AI as well and what Bitcoin, how the relationship between Bitcoin and AI. And then, as I mentioned, like the whole topic here is like the foolish things of the world, wisdom, wealth, and generational ministry. This is something, as you know, Ryan mentioned, we talked numerous times about the effect on future generations. This is going to be a focus. We're going to talk about the effect on nonprofits, the effect of currency devaluation, the effect of Bitcoin on these things. And so we'd love to have you in the room. We'd love to have you there to have these conversations, to chew on stuff together with us, work on projects together with us, and have them have things that you can take back home and work on back in your context. So you can go to, if you go to buy tickets there, you can buy these actually here. I'd recommend doing this. I'm actually, these prices will not be the same when you log in. I was supposed to update these the other day and I forgot to. So these will be more. The early bird tickets have passed. Grab your tickets before they go up even more. There'll be even more at the door. They're going to be $200 by the time you read this. So grab your tickets. We'd love to have you. If you are sticking around for BitBlock Boom, which you really ought to, it's the longest running Bitcoin only conference in the world, I believe. Gary does a great job, him and his team. You can get 10% off your BitBlock Boom ticket by using promo code TGFB. That also gives 10% to TGFB. That also allows us to continue to do what we're doing, allows you to support our work even more. So go ahead and grab your tickets. You can go over to BitBlock Boom. I think it's bitblockboom.com. Go over there and do that. We would love to see you. In addition to that, as we close, I do want to also mention, if you are, here we go. If you are interested in getting resources to give to people in your lives who are into Bitcoin or who ought to be into Bitcoin, you can go to our website, store.tgfb.com. You can get copies of our kids' book, The Orange Umbrella, the Bitcoin book that never mentions Bitcoin. You can get the actual hardcover or softcover right here. You can also get the coloring book that we made. It's exactly the same as all the text, just like the normal book, but it just allows you to color it as you see fit. We have the updated edition, both in hardcover and softcover, of TGFB Volume 2. This is incredible. This is other than The Orange Umbrella, the best book that we've done in terms of just the professionalism that went into the typesetting and all that kind of stuff. So can't recommend that highly enough. You also have TGFB coffee. Grab yourself some TGFB coffee while you're at it. We are grateful for you guys, and we will be back very soon with another episode of To the Unknown Pod, a TGFB podcast. Ryan, I will give you the last word.
I would encourage everyone just to pray for our leaders that this doesn't escalate anymore. If it does, it's going to be really bad. It won't be good for anybody. It'll make the COVID shock to the world seem like a small little thing. And yeah, like you said earlier on the show, like we are very blessed. Like we've had a lot of, at least on our inside of our country, we had a lot of peace and somewhat stable existence. And yeah, things can change very quickly. So I don't think we should take that for granted. It's pray for wisdom and discernment, because I've read the news as a hobby for like 30 years, and I've never in my entire life has it been more difficult to discern the truth. And I really, really try hard at it. And it's like, dude, it's really hard. So yeah, at the end of the day, try to educate yourself on what's really going on. And then also just keep praying for our leaders, because yeah, there's a lot at stake right now. And so.
Yeah, man. Well, Ryan, appreciate you. Appreciate all of you as an audience. If you like what you're hearing, you can like, subscribe, follow, support directly. We're grateful for your support. If you guys, your DMs, all this kind of stuff. If you have questions about anything, if we can help you in any way, reach out to us and we're happy to do that. But we will see you in the next episode.